From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Jay Widener joins us. The mysteries of the Georgia Guidestones, the very strange Denver airport in 2012. A potpourri of stories with Jay. Starbucks has pulled all products containing peanut butter from its stores in the United States and Canada as a safety precaution. And now the move came amid the U.S. salmonella outbreak linked to peanut butter and peanut paste from the Peanut Corporation of America's Blakely, Georgia processing facility. Seven deaths now have been tied to the contamination, which has made hundreds of people sick, according to U.S. health officials. The coffee chain said its products are not affected by a massive recall of the peanut butter products and that the Peanut Corporation of America is not a Starbucks supplier, but they pulled them anyway. Some of the pulled products included the company's protein plate, granola bars, and peanut butter cookies. My daughter called me today, and she said, our little Mia, that's one of my grandchildren, is selling her Girl Scout cookies this year, and I have always bought those tagalongs, those peanut butter-filled cookies. And I said, well, Christy, they say the Girl Scout cookies are safe, but I don't know. And so five boxes I'm going to order, but I guess the Girl Scout cookies are not tainted, they say. And they also say Southern California could be overdue for a strong earthquake on the notorious San Andreas Fault Line, which has had a major tremor about every 137 years, according to a new study. Large earthquakes have rumbled along a southern section of the San Andreas Fault more frequently than previously believed, suggesting that a strong quake could eventually hit Southern California. Now, this according to scientists at the University of California in Irvine. Major quakes occurred along the fault roughly every 137 years over the last 700 years. Until now, scientists believed big quakes occurred along the fault roughly every 200 years, so that puts us right in the window. The time interval between earthquakes may be even shorter, they say, something on the order of 100 years. In Bay City, Michigan, a 93-year-old man froze to death inside his home just days after the city limited his flow of electricity for not paying his bills. Marvin Schur died a very slow and painful death, according to the Oakland County's chief medical examiner. Neighbors discovered his body on January 17th. The indoor temperature was below 32 degrees at the time. The man had almost $1,100 in unpaid electric bills. Now, the utility installed what is called a limiter device outside his home. This device limits electricity flow to the home and blows out like a fuse if more than allowed is drained. Now, it's not known if anyone talked to him to explain how to reset the device to restore the power. How sad. The recession is killing jobs at an alarming pace, with tens of thousands of new layoffs announced on Monday by some of the biggest names in American business. Pfizer, Caterpillar, Home Depot, Sprint, more pink slips, pay freezes, and other hits expected to slam workers in the months ahead as companies desperately look for ways to survive. 78,000 jobs wiped out today. But they say sales of previously owned homes in the United States unexpectedly rose from a record low, propelled by the biggest slump in prices since the Great Depression. As foreclosures surged, investors are buying these up like hotcakes. Catherine Austin Fitz, managing director and member of the board of directors of Solari, is with us. Catherine, what do you think about this Bloody Monday job loss?
Well, I think it's the beginning. I think we've got more to go. So we've got, George, we're coming into the disclosure dates in March when a lot of corporations and pension funds and investors have to report their 2008 results and tax dates in March and April. So I think this is just the beginning. I think we're going to see a lot more.
Tip of the iceberg, Catherine.
Yep, it is.
We'll have to see what happens. What's new on your front?
Well, I'm dealing every day with people who are just struggling to adjust. I think there's not only the adjustment of dealing with the economics, but I think for many people, you know, Americans are a very generous and open people. We're a very good people, And I think seeing and watching the corruption in this country is very hard for many Americans to come to grips with. And the change in administration, whether you were for Obama or not, is a, you know, it's a good thing. It's a healing thing. So there's a lot of expectation and hope. At the same time, there's a realization that one person can only do so much.
Yeah, exactly, and we're losing a lot of jobs, Catherine. Matter of fact, yesterday I had a speech on the haunted Queen Mary in Long Beach, California, and it was a packed theater, and we talked a little bit about the economy in addition to why I was there for ghosts, and I said, raise your hand if you've been affected by this situation economically. Half the people in the theater already have been affected some way or another from this, and it's going
to
grow.
Now, what is amazing to me, though, George, is whenever I go shopping, the stores are packed, the restaurants are packed. So it doesn't, when you're on the ground on Main Street, it doesn't look like things are hurting. Now, you'll see a lot of small businesses shut down, and you hear reports of layoffs, but in terms of, you know, walking into Cracker Barrel in Jackson, Tennessee, it's packed.
Yeah, well, it may be packed on a Friday, Saturday, though. But what they're seeing is a tremendous slowdown during the week now.
Yeah, now that makes sense.
Yeah. All right, Catherine, thanks. Catherine Austin Fitz, her website, Solari, SOLARI.com. A Maryland teenager calmly admitted in court that he beat his mother to death with a baseball bat after an argument over his grades at a very prestigious private school. The prosecutors are seeking a life sentence with the possibility of parole when he is sentenced on April 3rd. Geez, obesity, they say, can be caught as easily as a common cold from other people's coughs, sneezes, and dirty hands, according to scientists. Researchers believe that an airborne germ could be causing the fat plague. As many as 1 in 3 obese people may have become overweight after falling victim to the highly infectious cold-like virus known as AD-36. It is known to cause coughs, sore throats, but has now also been found to make fat cells multiply, leading to weight gain. Some might call Emma Ray a real-life sleeping beauty. The 34-year-old from the United Kingdom suffered a heart attack nearly 2 weeks after giving birth to her son and failed to regain consciousness. Her husband, Andrew, spent 2 weeks by her bedside waiting for her to wake up from a coma, but her condition did not improve until he simply leaned over and asked for a kiss. What happened next was beyond my wildest dreams, he said. She turned her head towards me, puckered up her lips, and gave me a kiss. I couldn't believe it. My heart felt like I was going to leap from my chest. She collapsed while shopping with her husband 10 days after giving birth, taken to a hospital where doctors were able to restart her heart, but they warned that she would remain in a coma indefinitely. So a miracle there. Speaking of miracles, Joanne sent me this email. I'm going to read it to you. George, I emailed you last Friday about adding me to the prayer list. I was very concerned about the medical test I was going to have today. I wanted to let you know my test results. I had breast cancer in 2006. I have yearly mammograms, and last June, when I was checked, a growth the size of a pencil eraser was found in a duct. I was told I needed to be checked again in 6 months. A nurse told me that because of my history and the location of the growth, it was probably cancer, or it would turn into cancer. I was told that these types of growths don't go away. Well, today, when I had the mammogram, they found no tumor and only a slight dilated duct where the growth had been. The doctor at the center was very surprised and said I didn't need to be checked again for at least a year. He said everything looked normal. Sunday morning, I woke up, and my first thought was that all the Coast to Coast family was thinking, praying, and sending me energy. What a unique group of listeners, a very aware group of people. Thank them for me. How about that? The Royal Air Force in Britain is getting closer to shooting down a UFO, according to a former Ministry of Defense employee. Nick Pope worked on the UFO desk for 3 years, claimed pilots had fired at UFOs on several occasions, but failed to bring them down. We talked with Nick about one of those episodes some time ago, but he told The Sun, we know of cases where the order has been given to shoot down with little effect to the UFO. In a moment, Nick Pope joins us on Coast to Coast AM. Nick Pope was an official for the UK's Ministry of Defense from 1985 to 2006, and he was also the desk officer responsible for investigating officially documented UFO sightings to determine whether they involved any potential threat to the UK. He's very active on the UFO issue. Here he is right now on Coast to Coast. Nick, welcome back, my friend. How are you?
Yes, I'm fine, thank you. It's good to be back on.
Good. Tell me about the story in the Sun. You and I, we've talked about some of these UFO cases in the past. Seems like they're starting to pick up on this internationally these days, huh?
Yes, this is absolutely becoming, you know, mainstream news item over here. I think for too long, the UFO issue was regarded by some as a fringe issue. Skeptics tried to disparage it. And now, quite literally, in the last few months, we've seen The Sun, which is Britain's best-selling national daily newspaper, sells about 3 or 4 million copies. We've seen The Sun run not only a number of UFO stories consistently over the last few months, but twice in the last 6 months or so, they have actually run with it as a front page story. Now, I mean, this is, you know, to the, I guess, largely American listeners of the show, mm-hmm. I would say this is the equivalent of, I don't know, the New York Times, the Washington Post,
right.
You know, the Tribune, you know, running this as their main front page headline. I mean, it doesn't happen, but it is happening here in the UK. The media are beginning to take this seriously. They're beginning to realize, hey, you know, this is something interesting, important, and newsworthy.
Why the apparent change of heart, Nick?
I think a number of different things have come together, fortuitous timing, as it were. The first thing, and we've discussed this, I think, on previous shows, in May last year, the British Ministry of Defence began the process of releasing all the UFO files, the vast archive of material, some of it highly classified, going back many, many years. A policy decision was made that the time had come to release this and just let the people decide. There's nothing in there that says for sure that these things are extraterrestrial. The honest answer is we don't know. We simply don't know what they are. But the Ministry of Defense has these case files, hundreds of them, going back since, you know, going back to the 50s. And the decision was made to release them. So I think that certainly attracted the interest of the mainstream media. And they said, well, hang on then. Okay, what's in these files? And when they looked in these files, and I worked with the National Archives here in the UK to pick out some cases that might be of interest, when they looked, they saw, okay, some of these are misidentifications. Yes, there are some aircraft lights, weather balloons, mm-hmm. satellites, meteors, etc. But look, you know, when they looked deeper, they saw that there were indeed some cases where UFOs had been tracked on radar, seen by commercial airline pilots, seen by military pilots with jets being scrambled. And I think when the media saw that last year, they realized that they'd been had. The powers that be for far too long had used phrases like little green men and flying saucers to disparage this. But when they actually looked at the files, they thought, hang on a minute, there's something interesting here, serious defense and national security issues.
Was the scattering of the jets, the RAF jets, to fight back, was that done by order automatically? Or what necessitated the attack?
Well, now, this is where the story, I think, although it was fundamentally accurate, it's perhaps mixed a few different issues in. The conversation that I had with one of the journalists on the staff of The Sun, over the course of the weekend, in fact, several different conversations, we discussed a number of different issues relating to UFOs and a number of different cases. particularly, we discussed three cases which have been in the public domain for a while, although perhaps they've not been put together and considered, you know, in a sort of holistic sense. Now, these three cases were Parviz Jafari, Iran, 1976, scrambled,
right.
Tried to launch an air-to-air missile to bring down a UFO, but his weapons panel blinked out, malfunctioned. Everything else in the aircraft worked, but he couldn't launch the missile. That case. The second case that I highlighted was the case of Comandante Alfonso Huertes from Peru, December 1980. UFO intrudes into restricted military airspace, and again, a shoot-down order is given, and I'm sure we'll come on to the more general issue of shoot-down orders in a minute, but a shoot-down order was given. He opened fire with his cannon and actually saw the rounds, and you know, I've met him and I've heard him discuss this personally. He said the rounds were absorbed by the UFO. They didn't ricochet off. They didn't miss.
Just like they went right into it, but nothing happened.
Exactly. And the third case we discussed was the case of Milton Torres, the pilot who in 1957 was, again, based in England, but at a base, RAF Manston, that was at the time operated by the United States Air Force. And again, he was given a shoot-down order. A UFO was tracked on radar. He was about to launch rockets when suddenly the UFO vanished off his airborne radar screen. The UFO was being tracked on ground radar, and then he acquired it on his airborne radar as well. And what I was doing, and the discussions that I was having with the Sun, is I was effectively saying, well, look, there have been a number of these sorts of incidents all around the world. But nobody's put them together. Nobody's said, what does this actually mean? And I said, the answer to the question, what it means, is that there is a faction, there is a group of people. It's not necessarily any particular nation, but sometimes it depends on personalities. But there are people who say the only way to resolve the UFO mystery is to bring one of these things down.
Man, I'm not sure that's the right way to do it, Nick, if they have the technology to get here.
I agree, you know, with you, and I know that I'm upsetting a lot of people because of that argument, and I'm certainly upsetting the entire New Age community who say that space people are here to, you know, hold out the hand of friendship,
yeah,
et cetera, et cetera. I have upset a lot of people with this story, and I'm not saying that I agree with the shoot-down order. But what I am saying is, let's not try and kid ourselves that shoot-down orders haven't been given.
Was there ever a retaliation by the UFO?
No, not as far as I'm aware. And that's interesting, and perhaps that's actually quite encouraging. Looking perhaps again at the case of Parviz Jafari, here was a man who attempted to bring down a UFO by firing a missile. And it's interesting.
They could have blasted him out of the sky, Nick.
Yes, I think that's the case. And the fact that he didn't, the fact that he's still here to tell his story. And I, of course, he's associated, as am I, with the Coalition for Freedom of Information. We spoke at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Last November. And he's a very dignified, honorable man, retired as a general in the Shah's Air
right.
Force.
We had him on for a little bit, about a year and a half or so ago.
Oh, good. Well, yes. I mean, he's one of the most highly credible witnesses in this field. He just tells his story as it is. And, of course, as you know, his story is backed up by an audit trail of actually, interestingly enough, American documentation, because there was a CIA officer who was sent to the debrief. And yeah, I mean, to go back to that point, yes, there have been shoot-down orders given, but it is extremely encouraging, I think. Yes, it is encouraging that the UFOs, whatever they may be, have not retaliated by blowing our aircraft out of the sky, but have selectively deactivated the weapon systems.
Nick, we're going to be back, and we're going to take phone calls with you. We're talking with Nick Pope, former official for the United Kingdom's Ministry of Defense on UFOs. We'll take your calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Jay Widener joins us as we talk about the mysteries of the Georgia Guidestones, the Denver Airport, the Mayan calendar, and the prophecies of Nostradamus. But when we come back, we'll take your phone calls with Nick Pope right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We've got Nick Pope. We're going to take your phone calls as well. I wonder, and I would have to assume that other governments have similar orders to shoot. Don't you think, Nick?
Yes, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, I think the point perhaps that I've been trying to get across is that it's not a national issue. It's an international issue.
Yes.
And one can point to a number of countries, and I've picked out three. I've picked out Peru. I've picked out Iran. I've picked out, actually, America and Britain, given that this was United States Air Force in the UK in the case of Milton Torres. So again, I think the point is this is not something that's an isolated incident. There have been consistently over the last few decades several occasions where different countries have attempted to bring down UFOs. Now, I think one thing that I should say is that rules of engagement are very highly classified, and
yes,
that's not something that I or anyone should be discussing, yep, in public. Though there are a few fairly general principles that I think are generally in the public domain, i.e., particularly one can say that post 9/11 there would be circumstances where lethal force would be authorized if a commercial airliner had been judged to have been hijacked and was on its way, perhaps for a suicide mission. But, of course, that's a command decision. My understanding, certainly in America, is that the president and the Secretary of State for Defense would have to take that decision.
All right, let's take some calls. We'll go to David driving around in Ohio. Welcome to Coast. Hi, David.
Hi. Back during the fall, I did a pedal run, and I come around the building to make my delivery, and I looked out across the hood of my truck, and my lights came on this alien being. I've been to zoos. I've been, I've seen every type of animal that's out there, and I looked at that, and I said to myself, oh, my word, what could this be? And his elbows were up above the branch of this tree, and the tree limb was at least 10 foot off the ground. And he was brown in color. His head was square. He had black beady eyes. And when I threw my high beams up on my truck, he put his hands in front of his eyes, sort of like he was blinded by the high bright lights of the truck. My question is, who can I explain this or make a drawing of it that can tell me something more about this alien that I've seen?
Well, it's an extremely interesting account. I would recommend, certainly, pardon me, in America, of course, the public position of the United States government is that they don't look at these things and haven't since 1969 when Project Blue Book was closed down. So, actually, my recommendation is that you contact a civilian organization such as the Mutual UFO Network or the National
UFO
Reporting Center.
Peter Davenport's organization.
Indeed.
Sure. David, okay. And you can find those organizations on our coasttocoastam.com website.
All right.
Okay, and definitely. Right. Tell me, though, a little bit, how tall was this creature?
I said, we were sitting, I'm sitting in my truck and looking out across. We were eye to eye. He had to be at least 8 foot tall.
Skinny?
He had to be at least 8 foot tall. He had, he was built like any ordinary being, you would assume. He had like kneecaps. His skin, which on his belly was white, but on his sides and his back was brown. The layering of his stomach, which because he was facing me, when he was coming out of the tree, which really startled me, was because his elbows was higher than the branch. His fingers were spider-like, real thin, but real long. His feet were like club feet, but he had individual toenails. His head was rectangular or type of square. I don't know what else to describe.
More human or animal, in your opinion?
Human.
All right.
I would say
definitely.
He didn't have ears, so to speak, but he did have a mouth. And I think it really scared the daylights out of me because I turned around and locked both doors.
I don't blame you. Okay, definitely. Go to our website and look for those two organizations, the Mutual UFO Network and the National UFO Reporting Center, and you'll find those. And then send me, a copy of whatever you send them, okay, at george@coasttocoastam.com. All kinds of stories out there, Nick.
Yes, absolutely. It just shows, you just never know with this subject what's going to suddenly come out and hit you.
Let's go to Houston, Texas. Gene, east of the Rockies, you're on with Nick Pope. Hi, Gene.
Hi, George and Nick.
Hello.
Several things. I have two areas of conversation that I want to deal with. First, I've been having very unsettling experiences in my life since I was 5 years old, starting with in the middle of the night through Venetian blinds, having in my mind the Venetian blinds turning colors and then seeing the shape of a being behind the Venetian blinds, to the point even today I have a tremendous fear of having my feet left uncovered, because if they're uncovered in the bed, my toes will light on fire. Second experience, when I was at the beach on Lake Michigan, I had an experience where I can only say this, that in my mind I was sucked under the sand, and I can't say actually in my conscious realm that I was in a spacecraft, but that's the distinct impression I was left with. Every time I went to that area, the sand dune, I had a tremendous fear of being there. And it has just continued all through my life, where I have had different experiences with these types of things, almost like teasing my mind and my awareness. Many things. I worked at an airport late at night. Several people came to the airport inside a dark hangar, and I had a German Shepherd guard dog. The older lady was dressed in very, very old. The man, he was an English speaker, and he asked me if my dog bit. And I said, only if, someone
provokes him, right?
Yes. He pointed at the dog, and the dog backed up. It didn't turn. It backed up, yelped, and ran away.
Jeez.
The very same two people went to the runway, stood in the runway, and looked straight up. That's all they did. I was petrified, and I don't remember anything else after that.
Nick, this sounds like it could be also a classic abduction case.
Yes, certainly some of the hallmarks are there. And again, perhaps with the last caller, we discussed the Mutual UFO Network and the National UFO Reporting Center. Maybe this is something which might usefully be reported to the Intruders Foundation, which of course is headed up by Bud Hopkins.
Right. Good point. Good point. You know, and it tells you that regardless of what's going on here, a lot of people are being affected by something.
Yes. The wonderful quote that always comes to mind when I do shows like this and I hear fascinating calls like this is that wonderful and very profound quote from Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and I'm slightly misquoting it, I'm sure, but essentially the essence is ordinary people in extraordinary situations.
So true, so true. Next up, Denver, Colorado we go, west of the Rockies. Hey, Danny, go ahead.
Hello, sir.
Hi.
Mr. Pope, I had a question. You had said earlier that, as far as you know, there's never been retaliation by UFOs against military aircraft. What about Thomas Mantell?
That's a very good point, yes. I think all I can really say on that is that it's disputed. There is one school of thought that says that this was hostile action against one of our aircraft by a UFO, but there's another school of thought that says that Mantell had become disorientated, was operating above the height where one can safely fly without oxygen, and that the loss of the aircraft and the tragic loss of Mantell's life was an accident. Bottom line is, I don't think we know.
No, not at all. Let's go to a first-time caller. Another caller from Denver, Colorado. Hi, Ryan. Go ahead.
How you doing?
Good.
I had a personal experience in St. Petersburg, Florida, that opened me up to this subject, and I've done tons of research since, and my question for Nick was, is what is your opinion on the fact of our media and your media as well starting to give this so much attention? Do you think that they are possibly massaging us into kind of a false unveiling of what's really going on, and they want to feed us, you know, bits and pieces here and there to wake us up to it, but they're really not going to give us the full story in the end?
Well, I actually don't agree with that. I'll tell you why. The first thing I would say is that the media generally has to do two things. It has to inform, and it has to entertain. And I'll add a third, actually. It has to make money, because these are businesses. But in a sense, when people talk about the media, and often when people discuss this, they sort of put it in capital letters like that. That's actually a mistake. The media is not one organization, one body. It's a whole bunch of different companies and individuals. I actually write as a freelance journalist myself. People sometimes say to me, "Oh, you can't get UFO stories into the national press." Well, I do it all the time. I just get on my computer and write something and pitch it, and often as not, I get a commission. So I'm not a believer that the media is part of some campaign here. I think the media is actually just like government. It's just a bunch of different people. There are skeptics in the media. There are believers in the media. But most people in the media, just like most people in the government on this issue, really don't have a view. They're somewhere in the middle.
And they're in the dark, too, Nick.
Yeah.
Most of them are.
Yes.
Let's go
because unless you've looked into to this, you won't have that kind of deep specialist view.
Let's go to Utah. Edward, take it away. Hey, Edward.
Hello. I wanted to ask Nick if he has heard of reports. I was traveling over a mountain pass in Utah and saw a very small light. It was obviously not a plane moving around almost. I was with my nephew, and we called it a firefly. It was moving up and down, and we watched it maybe 30 miles south over Price, Utah, ascend up to the level of an airliner and follow it from below and move around and then move way back to the east. And actually, we were watching it, and we thought it was moving towards us, so we got back in the car and pulled out.
I
wanted to know if you've ever heard of that.
I haven't heard of that. I mean, course, I'm actually based in the UK, and I mean, you know, I can say generically that I've heard one or two similar things, but I certainly haven't heard about this specific incident. So again, I would urge you, because I think it's you know, important to get these things into the public domain and certainly to get them recorded somewhere, I would urge you to contact groups such as the Mutual UFO Network or the National UFO Reporting Center.
These pilots that were ordered to shoot down, I know we talked back in November about the pilot who just said this thing just took off so fast, even my rockets couldn't catch it.
Well, that was Milton Torres.
Yeah.
Yes, he, and in fact, he didn't even have time to fire. The UFO, whatever it was, had disappeared from his airborne radar.
And it was huge.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Do you think they have a cloaking mechanism?
It's possible, but I'm very reluctant to get into too much speculation about this. I think it's all too easy with this subject to start speculating, well, they may have this, they may have that. I think sometimes the safest thing to say is we don't know. And, you know, I come across a lot of people in this field who seem to have an answer for everything. And yet, the one thing I know in government is when you come across the person who says, you know, I don't actually know, or I don't have a view on that, you actually sometimes pay more attention to that person, because it's the old saying, I know what I don't know.
Good point. Let's go next to Macomb, Mississippi. Paul, very quickly, we'll take your question.
Oh, this is strange. I've been trying to get a hold of you for so long.
You did it.
Yeah, I made up my mind tonight I was going to give up trying to call. On November the 17th, between 2:10 and 2:15 in the morning, something fell out of the sky out here. I was working guard duty. And I can point exactly where it was from where I was at, but I couldn't tell how far. I would estimate that it could be at least the size of a Volkswagen, and it had... I couldn't tell any color to it because it was just red and yellow flames on the bottom of it.
Did you notice, Paul, if any military folks went out that way?
No, nobody ever did. See, we're about 130 miles north of New Orleans and 80 miles south of Jackson. So,
chunk of a meteor, Nick?
Could be, but again, I would say get in touch with, I mean, the Mutual UFO Network have an organization in every state in America, and if you can pinpoint that location for them, they might be able to get out there, do a site search, bring in metal detectors and things like that, do a proper scientific investigation.
Right. Well, it was rather large, and the thing that struck me the most is it had a long, fiery tail behind it. It looked like a Bunsen burner. You know, it started slowing down as it got closer to the ground. So,
could have been a meteorite.
It
was rocking from side to side.
It could be a meteorite. It could be something more exotic. We don't know, but I mean...
Space debris?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Could be. There are 9,000 different bits of space debris being tracked every day from space tracking radar. So there's a lot of stuff up there. You know, everything from defunct satellites to, you know, the literally the spanner dropped by the astronaut, that's up there too. You know, but yeah, if something came down, there should be debris. It should be possible to pinpoint the location. You can bring in metal detectors, Geiger counters. There's some good, hard scientific investigation that can be done.
Nick Pope is always updating his website, nickpope.net. Author also of Open Skies, Closed Minds, and The Uninvited. Thank you, Nick. And we'll be back in a moment with Jay Widener on Coast to Coast AM.